You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
To the strains of Def Leppard, it's another edition of the Massive Report here at Hendox. You know, I took my wife to see Def Leppard a couple of years ago. She's a huge fan. And she taps me on the shoulder halfway through the show and she goes, "Why is every song so slow? It's like they need to pick up the pace a little bit." I go, "Dear, the drummer has one freaking arm. What do you want?" Yeah. She felt really bad.
Oh, man.
Well, that'll happen. We're brought to you by 180 Property Development. We thank them for their sponsorship of the Mass Report podcast. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next project. It's Sam Fahmy behind the controls, and he has a microphone in front of him, so he's got something to say. That'll happen. Patrick Golden, welcome. And Mike Krosky, welcome.
Yay. It's been a couple of weeks.
Ooh, it has. I'm beginning to think that people are avoiding being on the Massive Report in order to not talk about the Columbus crew. Patrick?
I don't think it's necessarily the podcast. I think it's just anything to avoid talking about the Columbus crew because, you know, if you're writing about this team or if you're talking about this team, the story is very, very similar week after week.
It is, isn't it?
You see, and Caleb Porter in his post-game comments said, "Hey, you know, this is a little bit different. I saw some things out there." I've heard these comments before. He's not necessarily wrong. You know, the defense, fairly stout against a third-tier Orlando team, but that's beside the point. The midfield held possession, transitioned fairly well, and you get it to the offense, and there's no one to even there's very little going on. And, you know, if your defense gives up any sort of error, any sort of goal, which, you know, happened in the 84th minute, you're facing yet another loss, 13 in 15 games.
So. 9 in a row without a win. Mike, it seemed like Orlando came out with a game plan and they stuck with it, and that was we're going to cede most of the possession and most of the field to you, but we're not going to let you put any guys in a dangerous position, and they stuck with it, right?
Yeah, and that certainly was compounded after the goal. I mean, they had all 11 players behind the ball after the goal, of course. But yeah, prior to that, it was just let's play sound and stout defense, and then we're just going to go long and see what happens. And again, it just took that one play, hit the wing, send it in. And, you know, as the telecast pointed out, I mean, we had the identical play in the first half.
Yep.
And didn't finish. I mean, it was a mirror image. And we, the difference was we didn't finish.
Right.
And that's just been the story of this last, you know, what, 3 months? Is that what it's been? But, yeah, or Orlando, in the two games they've played against Columbus, that's what they've done. They've sat back, played really stout defense, and let's go long and counter. And it worked.
And they had to be pleased coming off that hard-fought Open Cup match. They sat several players. It was not, as you mentioned, Patrick, your regular Orlando 11. And I'm sure they went into the game going, let's just get a point and let's move on. And to get them all, they've got to be pretty excited about that. And now you kind of see the dying embers of a season. I don't know what the somewhere they can crunch the numbers and tell us the percent.
3% is what it is.
Is it 3% for the crew
currently
to make the playoffs?
Yes.
All right. Well, at this point, I'm turning the page, and I want to see what certain players can do. Keita played an awful lot, and as we'll mention later on in the podcast on the previews, we're going to need him now because the injuries are just piling up. I thought he looked pretty good, but you guys are the experts. What'd you see?
So I actually wrote a little bit about this on Sunday evening on the site, and I thought Keita played very well. I thought the defense in general played very well because Orlando was prepared to sit back and cede possession, and they really didn't move forward. So the defense didn't have a lot to do, but I thought Keita was very composed. He didn't really struggle. You know, he connected his passes. I think it was 26 of 28 passes.
That's great.
He never really put a foot wrong. And my goal for this season, and you know, I made the comment that I, you know, my chief goal for the season is getting Abubakar Keita as much playing time as possible. I kind of remembered, you know, this is kind of like how Will Trapp got some playing time in the dying embers of another lost season in 2013. Looking into it, their paths are strikingly similar, playing one season of college ball, coming out as a homegrown in the offseason, joining the under-20 World Cup team, playing in the World Cup, and then eventually coming in mid-season when they were finally available to the team. So I believe Trapp played 16 consecutive games to close out that season. This is a chance for Keita to get a lot of games. You mentioned it, and we'll preview it. But the injury report is looking like three defenders down, and Keita was the first man off the bench, and I would imagine he's the first choice to start on Wednesday.
Well, I think, you know, we don't want to see injuries, but I want to see this kid play. You know, as a person who's lived in Westerville a long time, it's exciting to see one of the local kids showing, as we saw in the U-20 World Cup as well. He's an important piece not only for the crew but for the national team program. Possibly going forward.
Yeah,
there's a
the
lot
road.
Of time, sure. and he needs a lot of experience. We'll see what happens. So that was exciting to see. Before we let this game go, because I don't want to spend too much time on it, what the hell, Dom Dwyer? After the game, I tweeted that, you know, that smirk that I wanted to knock off his face. I was like, what does that smile remind me of? And I go, of course, American Psycho.
Right.
So I paired this one of the smirks from American Psycho with Dom Dwyer. It's like, it's not so far off. He went headhunting.
Yeah.
He got his just reward at the time, a direct red, and of course he had to mug his way off the field. This should be a long-term suspension. Josh Williams has a concussion,
right,
because he got elbowed in the head by Dom Dwyer, and it was done purposely.
Absolutely.
Is there a history between those two in particular that we know of?
Not that I'm aware of.
It seemed like the only reason he came into the game was to take his head off.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, like I mentioned prior to the show, it's such a selfish act. I mean, you put your team down a player. You also take yourself out of the next game. Why? There was nothing going on.
He seemed to enjoy it.
Yeah, and then he tried to play coy, like, what? When the ref gave him a red card, like, I can't believe it. It's like, of course you did. It was very blatant. That wasn't a natural move to swing your arm back that way. And just why? What was the point?
Well, it wasn't even a natural move in that he was jumping up. He swung the arm, connected with Josh Williams' face, and then jumped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is one that's going to even look worse on video, and I would imagine he's in line for a long-term suspension. Before we turn the page, there's one other thing beyond Dom Dwyer that I wanted to kind of touch upon. You know, if the crew move into a 4-3-3, which Cale Porter after the game sounded like it's something that they might consider, that I think if you're looking in the midfield with Will Trapp, Artur, and David Guzman, none of those three are chance creators to be able to create any offense in an offense that's really struggling. So I find it interesting as the season progresses and as they start to develop what their plan is for the rest of the season. You know, verbally it will be playoffs up until they're eliminated officially.
I want to address that real quick. I think of all the three that you mentioned, Will Trapp has shown a good tenacity to play a long ball in open spaces that springs up players, whether with the national team or with the crew. Yet his role tends to be more on the extra, more on the defensive side of that ball.
Yeah, and he can be a distributor from deep. It's just that he's not going to be someone who's able to pull the strings when the crew offense is bogging down in the final third.
And he's more of a safety valve in that situation, right? It's like, well, play the ball back to Will and kind of hit the reset button. But you're right, Sam. I've seen some nice long balls from Will for the last several years now. And not only with the national team, but also with the crew. But
I think you'll see David Guzman try. Again, it's not his forte necessarily, but he is somebody who likes to switch the point of attack, which nobody else seems to want to do that. He at least tries to get the attack going. It's just, I think it's his secondary role. His primary role is to be a destroyer, quote-unquote, as they say. And so I think of those three, I think he's the guy that will be looked to do that more so.
You touched on something there, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's a problem that we're becoming too obvious and have been too obvious. It seems like we're constantly on one side of the field or the other.
Sure, and I think it's interesting you say that because one of the points I've made recently with the crew when it comes to our set pieces in the beginning of the season were our – that's what kept us afloat. That's
sure.
why we had a successful first run,
and
right?
And a ton of corner kicks in this game.
Right. Well, we've had a ton of corner kicks all season. Yeah. We're number one in the league, but we don't generate shots.
Yeah.
But I think what's happening is, you know, it's becoming very predictable. David Guzman takes the in swingers from the right side. They go to the six-yard box, and they don't get anywhere. Pedro goes on the left side, swings, does an in-swinger. They go to the six. They don't go anywhere. They're doing the same things over and over again, and then they're surprised when no chances are coming about. So that needs to change. They tried to tweak it a little bit where they did a short corner. David Guzman would run around and then send it in. But, okay, so you're doing two variations on your corner kick pieces. There should be four or five that you're doing. But they're becoming too predictable in the areas that they were successful in, and that's another reason why we're not seeing any goals.
I think that the interesting thing there is that Mike Makovich was cited early on in the season as someone who really set up the set pieces for the team.
Right.
And, you know, with his health problems and him resigning, I don't know how those are being designed necessarily right now.
Sure.
or who's working on the set piece, part of the set pieces there. So it may be a case where they don't necessarily have those roles defined like they did earlier in the season. Also, they were kind of overperforming. Set pieces aren't your great scoring chance creators. Mm-hmm. And without Higuain, you essentially have Pedro Santos. So I will be interested to see, as players get healthy, as Luis Diaz is able to join the team, if the way that this team plays is a little bit different. And it's not quite Berhalter ball. It's a little bit more direct.
Here's my concern, and I see this, you know, as I was watching corner after corner after corner in the Orlando game, my concern is, okay, you see how your teammates are taking these corners and where these corners are going. Why are none of the players adjusting to the fact that the corners are either long or they're wide? Or, I mean, I think it was two times that Pedro took the corner and hit it directly into the first defender from Orlando, and it's like, okay, adjust. Do something to position yourself differently to where, you know, the ball is coming, where you have any sort of rebounding chance, you know.
I think that also comes back to, you know, they are all direct corners. You know, they all are direct set pieces. You do not see the short corner kicks, which some people malign, but that gives you a change in point of attack or different kind of things where you're trying to change things up, that the pattern shifts a little bit. And I think this is a case maybe where they don't have the right coaching for it, and that's something that needs to be addressed.
But how many times did we see the corner kick get launched all the way past the back post, and everybody's like not going past the middle of the, you know, in the middle of the six yard box? That to me is a play. Like, how as a player you're seeing this over and over, how are you not adjusting to be like, okay, this corner is going to go long, I'm going to go position on the back post, or I'm going to go to position on the other side of the box to provide an opposite cross if this ball goes through everybody else.
Why not try some outswingers? I don't think we've seen an outswing corner kick in many games.
It has been a long time, and as far as positioning, as far as players, you know, those are supposed to be those are routines, those are rehearsals, and so this is a case where it's maybe less the players making the runs and more the players taking the kicks, that if they're not putting it where they need to be, then that's a problem.
Yeah, after a while, you have to execute. These are professionals. If they're not executing, you know, you have these plays set up for a reason, and I guess the guys on the receiving end of the corner kick can't just go, well, I'm guessing this one is going to be misstruck somehow, so I need to guess where it's going to go. You know, and if we're launching them into a defender close, well, I imagine it's a lot like baseball these days where they position the fielders in the shift and
the
so
shift,
forth.
Yeah.
So, you know, it seems to me that in their review of tape and their game planning, they kind of know where it's going too. So it's just another thing, isn't it? And you're not too concerned about turning the ball over the goal line if you know that the corner kick is not going to be effective anyway. So it's just, we'll just put that on the pile with the other stuff, guys, is what we're going to do.
Agreed.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to, there have been a lot of changes. more so than you normally see this time of year, but it's a team that's desperately trying to find their footing. So we'll look at the changes, and then, Mike, we did this exercise earlier this year where you put together a starting 11 and faxed it over to Coach Porter. So get your fax machine out. We'll do that next as we continue on the Massive Report in a moment. We're back at Hendox, the Massive Report. You know what's kind of fun is to watch Catfish on MTV with the sound down and try to figure out what's going on. It's not that hard, but it's sort of interesting.
And it is incredibly distracting.
It is. And that's
because you want to know what's going on.
I blame the crew. Because if they're playing scintillating soccer, we're not distracted by Catfish
on MTV
from like 5 years ago from the sound down. As a postscript to what we were talking about at segment one, Mike, you had a fascinating statistic, a fascinating fact from of our 17 goals this year, and that's alarming that we've only scored 17. How many have come from the left?
The left wing has produced zero, a big goose egg.
Now, put that in perspective. Is that...
Is that like
a unicorn event? At some point, you would expect something to come from...
Absolutely.
That's Justin Miram. That's Luis Argudo. That's Rubinho.
Yeah.
That's Pedro Santos occasionally when they switch sides.
Right.
Who else?
David Akam.
Hey,
Akam scored two goals, but they were in Open Cup, not in league play.
Right. That's the thing. And as we mentioned... For a Porter system to be successful, he even said it in the beginning of the year, he has to have his wingers to score. They need to score at least four or five goals on each side.
I saw Miram score a goal, but it was for Atlanta. It was a nice goal.
Right after the trade.
Yeah. All right. We're done now. Let's look forward and not back. The deals. Jordan Hamilton from Toronto. Patrick Mullins goes north. There's money going back and forth. We don't need to get into that stuff. Jordan Hamilton obviously is a guy that Tim knows very well because he was a general manager in Toronto. But it seems to me in reading the Massive Report and the coverage of the trade that they don't see him as a starting caliber player either. And he wasn't he was kind of a super sub for Toronto and some nice numbers. What do we see going forward, and why did they trade him? He seemed like a productive player.
I think it's a case where he needed to change the scenery. I was reading a little bit of the Toronto coverage of the trade and what they saw in Mullins and why they would trade someone like Hamilton. The case is that with him, he would be productive in spurts, but a lot of the coaching staff and a lot of the front office thought that he wasn't necessarily putting all that talent together. And so it's a case where... He's been given time and given time and given time, and it just hasn't come together. And it's a case where he might need a change of scenery. And so they were able to get, you know, Patrick Mullins, who wasn't in Caleb Porter's plans, and, you know, turn something in that you were already ready to give up on. So maybe it's a change of scenery. He's not necessarily starting caliber now, but, you know, the raw talent has always been there, and this might be a case where it finally starts to click in Columbus, and it's a kind of a low-risk, high-reward type situation for Columbus.
You know, here's the thing. He's young. He's only 23. He's very athletic, and if you – I did some math today. If you take his minutes played and compare it to his goals scored this year, he's scoring a goal once every 155 minutes, as opposed to Zardes right now, who's at 234 minutes per goal. So, again, not saying that he's better than Zardes, but the reality is that's a big chunk of time. That's almost a full game difference, right? So for me, again, he is a depth player. We need depth, as we have seen this year. If you take just our starting 11 and not have international call-ups and injuries and wear and tear, things like that, this team is probably a 6th, 7th, 8th seed in the East. Once you start getting below that and you get into the 12th, 13th, 14th guy, bottom level. And we're seeing it because that's... This is the reality of this roster. Yeah. And people complaining that, oh, why are we getting so much depth? This season's wise, we're seeking so much depth for the long haul because we've had none this year and we're playing like it and we're at the bottom of the table because of it.
This is a physical game, and as we've seen, guys get hurt. And if you've got nobody coming in that can fill in even reasonably well, that's what you get. Romario Williams, do we have any expectations for him?
again, this is another depth signing. He's very clearly going to be a guy that is going to be backing up who makes a lot of sense for how Caleb Porter wants to play. You know, he matches the skill set of being able to hold up the ball, being able to bring other players in. He's not necessarily, a fox in the box type player who I always attributed Patrick Mullins to that type of player, where he was more based off of movement and, you know, he would finish his chances and get into the right spots, and he didn't really connect with a lot of the rest of the team. Romario Williams matches up. I would say he's kind of like a plus J.J. Williams.
Okay.
And J.J. is going to go on. He's already on loan in Birmingham. And so this is a case where he's getting some time. Romario Williams is experienced. He's been in the league. And he can do what Caleb Porter wants him to do when they need someone beyond what, when Zardes is out, or when they need to change things up or go with a slightly different attack.
Wait. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
I would say he's a change of pace type of guy. He's different than Zardes. I mean, okay. Zardes is going to work defensively.
And that's much appreciated.
Absolutely. And he's got Zardes has some speed, but I don't know he's quite the athlete that Williams is.
Okay.
Same with Hamilton. So if you want somebody who's going to bring a little more pace, a little more energy, those two guys are good to have come off the bench. And I think the biggest thing about Romario Williams, he has something to prove. He wants to show the league that he's somebody that could earn minutes and maybe even become a starter, even though it's going to be difficult giving Zardes as the lone striker and he's got a DP contract, all that stuff. He wants to prove that he's a guy that can push for minutes. So, again, we talk about change of scenery over and over again. That's sometimes what it takes for players to really find their success.
Robinho, early in the season on the Massive Report, at least myself, I was excited at the tools, saw the heavy touch and was frustrated at times with the heavy touch. But I saw the potential. Well, just the other day, the club threw their hands in the air for whatever reason and swapped him off to Orlando. Any reason behind that specifically, Patrick? Or
I think this is a case where it's not one of Caleb Porter's guys. So he was signed under the new ownership technically, but that deal was done, to my understanding, I believe September or October, even last year, that they had a lot of the stuff taken care of to get that actually executed. And so the scout that signed him, the scout that identified him, is actually in Orlando City now. He moved over there during the whole transition, found a role with them. And so I think this is a case where they were able to say, hey, this is a skill set he may fit in Orlando better than what Caleb was going to be able to do with him. Looking back at Robinho's history, you know, it's littered with second division stretches in Brazil, and that's not necessarily the highest level of competition.
Right.
So, at 24, he's no longer necessarily a young guy.
Isn't that funny to ponder that?
At my age, yes, it is.
24, a little long in the tooth, but I get it, you know. I mean, this is a young man's game for obvious reasons, and guys can figure out how to carry on into their 30s and so forth. But as far as being a prospect,
right,
you got to start showing it by before you hit the age of 25 anyway. And there were definitely holes in his game. As I mentioned, the heavy touch was something that I was frustrated with.
His decision-making was
poor. A little bit off. So I don't see him being a big difference maker down there. He's just another piece that another team that's looking to find their way into the playoffs and probably doesn't have a great shot at it. He's just another guy. Real quick before we get to your part two, version 2.0 of the Dream 11 for Mike, will we see room this week at all in goal?
That's a good question. I know his is at paperwork. Unfortunately, that would be more a question. The team did not train today, so we don't necessarily have those answers. He is awaiting paperwork.
Is that as far as visa and so forth?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So the transfer is complete. He needs his visa, and I believe the international transfer certificate's already obtained. So it's just the visa stamping. And I would imagine as soon as he's ready, as soon as all the I's are dotted and T's crossed, he's the name in the goalkeeper shirt. He's
but probably not this week, huh?
That stuff can happen quickly.
Okay.
Maybe not Chicago, but Montreal for a home debut. I wouldn't roll out either, but by the time Montreal rolls around, I would expect that the team would have gotten everything that they needed to. I know he was over in the Netherlands last week. Trying to get a lot of that stuff taken care of, and it can happen fairly quickly.
Okay. And he's wearing 99, huh?
Yeah. He's going to be Gretzky in goal, I guess.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a terribly historic number for the Crew. Washington's the famous number 99.
Yeah, yeah.
Steve Cirk reminded me that Ryan Coyner changed his number to 99 from number 9, I believe, when he came over in 2006, and that was just kind of sad, frankly.
I feel like we're missing one here, aren't we? Isn't there another 99 that we're not thinking of?
The only one I thought of was Washington.
Yeah.
I thought there was another one.
Dante and Ryan Coyner were the ones that I know of. Steve Cirk's very good at that, so
okay.
I'll yield to his depth of knowledge there.
Absolutely.
But a goalkeeper wearing number 99, I will talk with Pat Murphy, my fellow Massive Report editor. He's a very traditionalist number for all the players, so he likes a goalie to wear number 1. I was a big fan of Zach Steffen wearing number 23 and the team not even having a number 1 shirt issued for like a year and a half or 2 years. And I thought that was hilarious. And it's actually until Joe Bendick wore it in March of this year that the Crew actually had a goalkeeper wear number 1 since Steve Clark left in 2016.
Well, here's one for you. Since Africa is obviously such a big part of Crew culture, Toto has a song called 99, do they not?
Ah, yes, they do.
When he makes a big save, you hear 99.
I didn't even think about that.
That's
I worked in an adult contemporary radio station back in the day, so I remember those songs.
That's off their first album, if memory serves.
Oh, my God. You know way more about Toto than any person should.
No, that is...
He's a nerd. He's a grade A nerd.
I think that's actually off of Hydra. Pardon me.
Hey, you know, I'll yield to you.
Hey, Patrick, do you ever wear T-shirts? I've never seen you in a T-shirt, not once.
No.
Not even when he does yard work.
No. There's a very practical reason why I don't wear T-shirts when doing yard work. I'm very pale-skinned, and that is all sun protection.
Okay.
So it is all sun protection. No, I will wear T-shirts. I wore T-shirts on vacation because my kids got me Disney T-shirts when we went to Disney,
on vacation, you let it all hang out.
So hanging loose.
No, actually, I was wearing... I had a Hawaiian print shirt that I have had.
That's good. Mercy. I think you could rock that.
Hey, real quick, going back to Steve Clark, did anybody see the saves he made this weekend
with
Portland?
He has been in such form.
Unbelievable.
So that's a case where I am genuinely happy that he has rediscovered.
He's a great guy.
He is a fantastic guy. Every time I talk to him, he was stand-up, no matter the situation. It's a case that in 2016, it was probably best that he left the team because that was a case where that was never going to, you can't get over that.
No,
I'm glad that he has rediscovered his career I root for him just much,
Look like up the highlights from this weekend's game. It was Portland and Colorado. He made two phenomenal saves in the span of about 15 seconds. Absolutely phenomenal.
Well, I mean, just as a fan, I just always love the yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I mean, that was something that my family will never forget. We always, he was a fan favorite, and it was sad how MLS Cup went. I don't hold it against him. You have bad days. He's such a great guy. I wish him nothing but success. We are going to preview the Chicago and Montreal matches in the third segment, but it's kind of a setup for that. And we did this earlier in the year. When was that we did that we did Mike Krosky's starting 11 that you were to fax over?
Kansas City game or something?
It was a long time ago, but you did fax it over,
I did.
Right? Okay,
yeah. Porter must not have gotten it because I'm sure if he would have enacted the changes.
Did Queso guy take the fax machine with him to Austin? Maybe that's the problem.
Maybe
the starting 11 churned out in that office that they rented out in that abandoned strip mall down there in Austin.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll try again. You have and you were concerned about, well, these guys might not be here yet, or, you know, what we're not talking about Chicago necessarily or Montreal. We're just talking about if you had the full roster of players available to you, maybe by Saturday.
Okay.
What
yeah.
would you put out there?
Okay, so of course minus guys like Milton or Higuain, obviously.
Right. They're injured, they're gone.
And so between 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 also.
Well,
I'm kind of wondering.
You get to pick your formation.
So I'm going to stick with what I think is more realistic, which would be a 4-3-3, because I just think given that there's not a real 10, I thought Santos did an admirable job there, but you could tell he wasn't quite comfortable and confident in that role for consistent periods of time, right? So for me, I thought this starting the 4-3-3 and the starting 11 that we had over the weekend was fairly close to what I would see moving forward.
Okay.
Now, having Mensa back, that'll be a big difference, I think. I rate him higher, much more so than Sorrow. Certainly Josh Williams, but obviously Josh Williams will be out.
And it looks like we're not going to see Mensa either, right?
Well, he's questionable.
Mensa's questionable with his knee injury. Sorrow's out with his quad injury. And Williams is out with his concussion.
With the Dom Dwyer elbow drop. Yeah.
All right, so you have to kind of take that into consideration.
I'm shooting for Saturday.
Okay, Saturday.
Okay, so let's shoot for Saturday. All right, so from left to right in the back, we have Francis, Mensa, Kaida, and Offal. Okay? I don't think you have to tweak that so much. I liked what we saw over the weekend, and I think once Mensa gets – I just think Mensa is so much better than Sorrow, which will help settle things down. Not that we even really need that much settling in the defense. It really was one mistake, unfortunately, right?
And it wasn't even at the back line.
It was
getting pressure in midfield to prevent that pass, that line-splitting pass, which then your center backs have to cut out. But, you know, you really want to stop that play before it even happens.
Indeed. Absolutely. So, now, I thought going to the 4-3-3, there's really no adjustments you can make given the roster that we have at this point. So, it's going to be Artur, Trapp, and Guzman.
Okay.
Now, maybe over time, knowing the roles now, not having Santos in there, not having Guzman and Trapp or Artur and Trapp, having those three having some training together and a game in their pockets, maybe they can play a little more in sync, right? Then I'd like to see a calm on the left wing, Santos at right, and Zardes for about 60 to 65 minutes. If he's not getting it done, then bring in Romario Williams.
No chance of seeing Jordan Hamilton.
I'm not opposed to that. I think he's one of those guys that could be like a, quote, super sub. But I really believe that Romario Williams is playing with a chip on his shoulder right now, and I think this is the perfect time to get him some minutes.
Patrick, I feel like as a fan, I don't have a good perspective on when a player changes clubs, how long it takes for them to be able to for Caleb Porter, in this case, to reasonably expect that they could go on the field and be productive, because that's what you want. How long does it take?
It's definitely not like hockey.
No. It depends on three things. It depends on the system, it depends on the player, and it depends on the position. So if you're talking about a goalkeeper who so dropping in Eloy Room into the lineup.
He was my keeper, by the way. I forgot to mention.
Would be fairly straightforward because, you know, he knows how to play with his feet. He knows how to pick out passes and shot stopping. Now, if you're talking about trying to put in a midfielder into the lineup and trying to get him some understanding of making the right steps in working with, say, a double pivot or, you know, one in front of the other, you know, midfield, then maybe it's a little bit longer. Your wingers making certain moves under Berhalter's system, that took a long time for certain players to get into that because, you know, you saw that with Kakuta Mane, just getting the understanding. Porter's system is a little bit more simplified and a little bit more player-based so that they need to have that understanding. It's more soccer, and you should understand it, and you should be able to do that. So I think it really depends on the – and then how, you know, how adept the player is to really understanding those. I'm a big fan of Hector Jimenez and the fact that he is able to play so many positions. That's a level of soccer IQ that some other players don't have.
Okay.
He would be able to transition into a new team, get an understanding, and then probably drop in fairly quickly. Other players, maybe a little bit less so. I think somebody like Luis Diaz, who's a little bit younger, with a reduced instruction set and fairly clear directions. You're going to see him, this month sometime if he gets cleared. They're going to be, you invest some money. You want to see what you get out of him.
And right. We didn't even talk about him. There's so many guys floating out there in the ether
And he can be a difference maker. He was the young player of the tournament in Costa Rica for the second half of the period between January and May.
Okay.
And he played his way into contention to be on the Costa Rican Gold Cup team at the age of 20.
Yeah.
That's very impressive and has earned him $1 million transfer fee.
Mm-hmm.
So counterpoint to Mike, I don't know where the goals come from that lineup. So mine would be tweaked a little bit. I'd keep the defense the same and just looking out. And my time horizon is for the second half of the year, just what I want to see. Keeping the defense essentially the same. I think Jonathan is the best defender in the team. I think you got to get Abubakar Keita as many minutes as possible. Waylon Francis and Harrison Offal are your wing backs to be able to give you the best chance of near term and mid term success. Though, how long Harry has at the age of 33 in a very active position remains a challenge. A little bit more interestingly, I am not a big David Guzman fan. I would play a 4-3-2-1, 4-2-3-1, and I would have Will Trapp, and then it would probably be Guzman, unless Artur is able to recapture that form. And then Guzman would be the player a little bit ahead. I would actually not play them as double pivots, and it would be more of a Trapp dropped back, and then something a little bit more akin to Berhalter. And then I would look for Santos to play in the middle. Akam on the left, and then Luis Diaz on the right with Zardes in the front, with the idea that Caleb Porter, I think, showed how this team could score goals when they have all the pieces. It would be playing direct, and I think that the nature of the Crew offense would be evolving into a more direct, more speed-based attack, and Santos is not a playmaker. I agree with Mike. Yeah, he will try to do that admirably. What he did show was that, one, he can carry the ball forward on the dribble. Mm-hmm. He can also pick out the direct pass when necessary, which I think is very valuable. You have Akam as the speed bomber, Luis Diaz, who has some speed, and then Zardes is there to get – the guy's tireless. He'll make the runs. So, and Jordan Hamilton and
Williams.
And Romario Williams as your options, depending on what works and what doesn't.
You're definitely not wrong there. I think my thought with the three is, one, with Luis Diaz, even Porter's tried to tamp down, like, hey, don't expect a lot just yet. You know, he still has a lot to learn in terms of finishing, which I think as a team we've seen that, right? And in crossing and things like that. So, of course, I would like to see him just for the fact that, why not? What do we have to lose at this point?
Absolutely.
But I feel like we're probably a 2 to 3 weeks away from really seeing him make much of an impact. I think the biggest thing right now with Santos, I think we have seen what he can do. I mean, him playing under Porter is the best he's played in the, 2.5 years he's been with the club.
Absolutely.
And he's definitely showed better at the wing. Now, I loved him the first game or two at the 10, but then we started seeing him kind of push to and trying to take his 10-level game to an area that he just wasn't able to accomplish. He wasn't as effective. But I do like what you're talking about, that he will take guys on, he'll dribble, which we didn't see with Higuain the last couple of years because he's older. That's going to happen, right?
Yeah, and I think the key there is that when Santos had to really kind of stretch, especially the time when Akam got injured, and there was no one else to really play off of that you could play the way he needed to. So with the return of Akam, who got in 25 so minutes on Saturday, which is something positive for this team, you can possibly see the signs of what they might be able to do. So looking long term, what that gets you, Luis Diaz played a lot for Herandaya, however you pronounce it, his Costa Rican team. He was a starter. So I think him getting major minutes, maybe not necessarily being starter, maybe that's Jordan Hamilton's position, something like that, where you have something that you can rotate as he acclimates. But you kind of want to see what he's able to do in competition. Abubakar Keita at 19, he's filled in. you know, he could get minutes. Also, Pedro Santos, he's you know, in his 30s. You
he's
know
30,
what?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what you're getting. However, is he coming on a contract option year? You're getting a little bit more information on whether or not that's somebody that you can use as that 10 in a pinch, or is sort of a bridge if you cannot find one in the off season and trying to force something. And then, of course, it comes a short-term rental. You're getting some value out of him and possibly scoring some goals.
I think.
And what are you going to do with Eduardo Sosa? Like,
not much.
Okay.
Do
so
we all of a sudden keep have him, too many keep, players?
Do you keep him as depth though, or do you send him out because he doesn't fit
no,
in your
depth.
Game plan?
No, I think depth.
I think depth, and I'm not sure. So he's going to get some time to figure out if he has a place within the club. I think that there are a considerable amount of players who don't have a role within the club.
Luis Arturo?
Well, actually,
I will absolutely disagree with you that. I think he's been the best player, he's been one of the best players in the last two games.
So he puts in effort, but his decision-making, just like Rubinho, sure. is very suspect.
He kind of jumped off the screen to me on Saturday in a negative way. And again,
how so?
I'm not – just I felt like his decision-making wasn't that great. There were some turnovers.
I thought the game, what was the last home game? Was that Seattle? I thought Seattle. He may have been the best player on the field that
game.
Well,
I was on vacation. I didn't see that game.
So I thought he was great. I thought he was kind of forcing the issue a little bit this weekend. But
yeah,
still
I think that's
was...
a good way to put it. I have no question about the effort or anything. I just thought that at times it was just like it was the wrong thing at the wrong time.
So Hector Jimenez is 30.
Yeah.
Luis Argudo is, I believe, 23 or 24. Hector Jimenez is getting to the age where you might not be able to rely on him to be your guy like you want him to be. Luis Argudo has played central midfield. He's playing attacking midfield occasionally. He has played left wing and right wing. I look at someone who is flexible, who has a level of tenacity, who has a soccer IQ, as something that's very valuable. I see him, you know, I doubt he'll get to this level of quality because it's kind of underplaying this guy I'm going to compare him to. Jeff Larenovitz of Atlanta is a battling MLS pro who has a set level of talent, but he wrings every ounce out of that talent.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think Luis Argudo is a guy where you might be able to get that for at least a couple years, and there's some value to him. So when you're looking at players who are going to be here for 2020, Luis Argudo may not be that guy. You're trying to decide about a guy like Luis Argudo or Eduardo Sosa, who I think is maybe on the cut side of that line, or someone like Nico Hansen, who right now may be on that cut side. If he can't get time in this roster right now, that's a problem. So you're looking at these kind of players, and if you're looking at what they're able to bring, Nico Hansen brings a winger. Eduardo Sosa is an attacking midfielder. Luis Argudo is a guy who gives you energy across four different positions, and this is valuable to coaches. Will do what the coach instructs him to
okay.
do, 100%. And that's something that you know fans. I think it's legitimate that fans don't understand that, or it's legitimate that fans question that, but coaches really value a player who has that capability to do what the coach says.
You can't have too many guys like that, and same thing with a Hector Jimenez. I'll take a zillion of those guys because, again, there's only a couple of things you can really control in a game. Effort is one of them.
Yeah.
Everything else, there's pretty much that's it.
That's an excellent point.
And he's going to bring you everything that you have. And again, he's going to have his ups and downs because he's still getting minutes. He didn't get hardly any at all in the beginning. But again, in Seattle, he may have been the best player on the team.
I think what I'm reading between the lines, we talk a lot about age, and we don't want to be ageist here or anything. God knows we're all getting long in the tooth. But it seems that there's a lot of youth on this roster, and there are a lot of guys on the wrong side of 30, and there's very little in that sweet spot in between. And you have to grow those guys into that core that by the time they hit 25, 26, 27, they are ready to roll.
It's a young man's game.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about on the agenda of today's show to rebuild now or later. Well, we're in the rebuild right now as we speak.
It's going to be now and later.
Yeah, it's going to be both. I mean, we're in the midst of it, and it's going to continue. And just like we've talked about, guys like, you know, Santos over 30, Higuain's 34. You know, those guys were pillars of the team. Miram, at the start of the season, he's 30. He got sent off. That's not on accident. They're blowing it up, whether people want to believe it or not.
They're
or
not going to say it.
Right, yeah, but well, that's what's happening.
I think it's very astute. When they were going through the midst of the first losing streak and the first transfer window was closing, at the end of that, and after everything shook out, they had only one of their attackers under contract for next year, and that was Giassi Zardes, who signed a new contract. Higuain's on a 1 year deal. Santos is on a player a mutual option, I think. He's not guaranteed for next year. David Akam will be in Nashville, and so you have the ability to remake this team. And they were thinking, okay, these aren't the players that Caleb wanted. We're getting some results. Things are a little shaky, and then they went out and they've had the miserable stretch that they had, and it's clear that, you know, you have some. So when I look at what happened this year, this team got old really fast.
Uh-huh. Yep.
This team got really old really fast, and then the depth that they brought in was paper thin. As you say, you can't have enough hustle, guys. I think that there is a limited amount of hustle that you need. You know, I think it's very valuable to have a Hector Jimenez. I think a player like Luis Argudo, even if it's not Luis Argudo, is very valuable to have. But what they're missing is game-changing talent.
Well, of course you're going to want those guys. But what I'm saying is I'll take a guy like Argudo and Jimenez over essentially anybody below the top 10 on the roster.
I would agree with that, because if you're looking, that's the reason why Argudo is getting game time and Nico Hansen isn't.
Right.
Nico Hansen was, you know, he his first game time this year, it's very admirable playing right back, but it was clear that it was not something that he understood, and they had been trying to train that for weeks even before that to really kind of get him up to speed, and it wasn't something that he could adapt. And having that adaptability, I think, is going to be very valuable, that when it comes to the end of the season and you're on a team option and the team's trying to figure out what to do, and your roster spot is a roster spot, and you're, you know, not even a over $100K salary, that roster spot will turn into somebody that, you know, could be more flexible, that can fit in, that fits in to respond to how Caleb Porter's coaching the team. Because the aside to this, Caleb Porter will be here next year for sure, because they're not, you know, I can understand the heat on a coach.
It's too early.
13 losses in 15 games. I can understand why people are upset.
Sure.
Because that's a lot of losses. However, on the first year of a 5-year deal, and the front office, I know, has absolute faith in his ability compared to what the players are. And this is a strange thing, because normally you get rid of the coach. You know, we got our guys. We get rid of the coach. The coach is holding us back. You look at this roster, and there's a definite deficit of talent in so many key areas that Caleb Porter is not the one that they're going to let go of. It's going to be a decent chunk of this roster, as you've already seen with guys like Miram leaving, or guys like Rubinho coming and going, or guys like Patrick Mullins. They're not going to be the first.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's way too early, as we've talked about before. This is a different set of circumstances. I think all too often in professional sports, the coach gets the axe, the manager gets the axe. When it's too early, it's the wrong time, you send the wrong message. Who are you going to replace him with? The fact that the program couldn't get underway until January, I think it's just, you just give him a mulligan, and you do what you can here down the stretch, and then you look towards 2020, and you look toward the stadium, and we keep that on the horizon. We try to make the best of what's left of this season. I still think there's some interesting storylines. There are some players that I want to see play. And there are some teams that they're going to play against. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We got two. We got Chicago at Chicago. still playing in their old place that they can't wait to get out of. And then Montreal at home on Saturday, for which we have tickets. Correct, Sam? Yes, we do. And we'll tell you more about that as we return in a moment on the Massive Report. We are back in the Massive Report here at Hendox, where we almost had to give up the pool table, and that's a problem because we got all of our crap all over it. And Sam, I thought he was coming over the table to take that guy on. Has he left the bar yet?
I think he's still out there.
Not, God in him.
He is not out there.
Okay, but, I mean, this is my bar. Well, not quite my bar, but
we have
the connections here to
Sam's Town.
Get him.
The killers
and even Willie's here for the Willie homeless bum toss, which we've done before, live, on the podcast.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, we've had people toss before.
Okay.
Ain't got no shame.
Well, he preemptively tossed himself, apparently. Okay, before we get into Chicago, which is Wednesday, and then Montreal here at home, for which we have tickets, on Saturday at Montreal Stadium, a quick tip of the hat to Dante Washington, who is back with the organization. And might I say that Dante was a true... Of all the ex-players, you can't think of any that were more passionate about Save the Crew than Dante Washington, and he has rejoined the organization. What is his role going to be, exactly?
Player development something or other, right?
He is, I also believe, the coordinator with the community coordinator as well. So he's a vice president, and he will be managing the relationship with some of the youth development and the community development and the partnerships there.
And that's going to be an important role as we see the Moffrey site transition into this asset for the community as far as, you know, the fields and the courts and the training ground for the team and bringing the community in there. So I certainly – and he's such a personable guy, and people love him.
Oh, yeah. He's very
perfect for the job.
Yeah.
So kudos to Dante Washington. Now, when I saw that Steve Lyons was joining the front office as a baseball freak, I'm thinking, the former Red Sox? What? That's not who we're talking about here.
No, he was with the Columbus Partnership.
Okay.
He was one of the guys that was helping with Save the Crew.
Oh, okay.
Which inevitably led to him getting this role. So it's good to have a good local guy with the business ties. Because right now I think that's a part from the marketing side that was really severed from the previous regime. So to have a guy who's tied in that way,
yeah,
I think will help, especially as you move into 2020 and then 2021 with the
new
stadium.
Bring in the corporate dollars.
So officially, Dante Washington is the director of team strategic partnerships and business development.
Yes.
He comes from Nationwide. He also has his MBA. I believe that's from Capital, but don't. He has a wealth of background.
He's been busy since he retired,
as it turns out. Yes, he has. He also has been at the forefront of really tying the team to the players in an unofficial role, the alumni game.
I would really love to see more of that.
Yeah. People love it, right?
Absolutely.
He's a fantastic follow because he's just genuinely a very positive energy guy. To really kind of see his interaction with people. So he said, you know, there won't be, you can only have that once. However, I have some things in mind. It's like catching lightning in a bottle. But, you know, definitely the players are going to be the alumni are definitely going to be much more involved. Dante's found fantastic addition to the front office to really kind of have that understanding from a business sense, to really have those ties to the community and the crew history. So Steve Lyons is also an interesting hire. He is essentially the number two below Bez Pachenko, in my mind, on the business side. So he is the chief business officer for the team. And we were talking about rebuilding on the field, you know, now and later. Steve Lyons is rebuilding off the field now and later. So this is a hire that it's very interesting. I think this season you can really see that maybe – Maybe it was rose-colored glasses. Hey, you know, the team's saved. You know, we have a lot of hard work ahead of us, but we've made a lot of progress already. We've made some amount of progress. Seeing the people who aren't necessarily keyed into the team that was staying or have, possibly left the team that said, you know, the whole they're trying to leave the city. They're kind of – they'll have to earn back my trust. Steve Lyons has – two pieces of experience that's very interesting. He's worked for the Columbus Partnership as their chief of business development for almost a decade, and that's fantastic experience if you've seen the work that the Columbus Partnership has done to really build those connections amongst the city. So he has the movers and shakers across the city on speed dial, and so when they get a call from Steve Lyons, they're not going to send it to voicemail. They're going to say, hey, what do you need, Steve? What are you calling me about? Because I know you're not going to waste my time. The other thing is that he has sports experience in the past, even beyond that. So I look at this as if you're looking for the perfect hire that has ties to the Columbus community, that can make those calls, that can make those connections, but also understands the arena sports, you can't get much better than bringing on Steve Lyons.
Well, I think, and I've mentioned this in prior weeks, I think that Save the Crew was such an overwhelming experience with all these ups and downs. And the mistake that some people made, and I'll put myself in that bucket. It's like, well, we saved the team. Here come the people again. And for a lot of people, the Crew are another entertainment option. If you have kids, it's like, well, we'll go to a game or two a year. They're not as dialed into this. Believe it or not, they're not as dialed into the Crew as we are. So to win back the casual fan that'll come out a couple of times a year and add up those people, You pretty much still are starting with square one, and that's also with the business community. Sure. People are busy. They just have this sort of snapshot of, well, there was this whole thing, and the team almost moved, and I don't know if I want to invest in this because who knows what's going to happen. And you really need that point person that's out there, someone that they know that can go out there and go, hey, look, this is what happened. This is where we are. This is where we're going. And they need to be patient, and everyone needs to be patient. Patience. Patience, patience, patience.
Yeah, patience on the field, off the field. Understand this is a long-term project, right? Yep. So whether it's fans, you know, saying Porter should go because we're not winning now, are not seeing the big picture. Whether it's businesses saying, well, is the team going to be around? Well, we're going to be around. So let's get you involved moving forward.
I'd rather be in our situation here than they are in Chicago, if I could segue into Wednesday's game. I'm sorry, Patrick, I interrupted you.
No. So when I look at that, I think that the proof is in the pudding. So, you know, seeing the big picture, fans have to have it proven to them.
Sure.
This team has the second half of the year to prove it to them.
Yeah, fair enough. That's how it works.
Caleb has the second half of the year to prove it to him. He'll be around next year, yes. just the way that is. But off the field, this team now has a very critical standpoint to really kind of drive what 2020 looks like off the field when they're making those calls. And Steve Lyons picking up the phone and calling Nationwide, or Steve Lyons picking up the phone and calling Cardinal Health or L Brands or any of these other major people within the community to say, this is what we can offer you. Here's our vision. Here's where we are. Here's where our season tickets are. Here's our strategies, and be able to execute that on, you know, phone call after phone call after meeting after meeting. And then as they plan out what season tickets look like and the strategies for 2020, and make that a value worth getting into as, you know, 2021 comes around and the stadium comes around. So, yes, it's a long-term project, but, it's rebuild now, rebuild later.
The excitement is only going to increase as we get closer to that stadium. And I think sometimes we forget that we're going to be in a new ballpark here in a couple of years. And they're putting together a plan, as I see it, that really next year we're going to see the push towards we're moving down the road. So in the meantime, we got to play in 2019. We have Chicago, who I understand I heard Dwight Burgess during the telecast on Saturday say that it's a done deal, and the Fire are moving from the suburbs back to the city.
So
they're leaving that stadium behind and moving back to 1990s MLS, mm-hmm. and moving into a giant football stadium.
So they have their deal with the city of Bridgeview to say, hey, we've amended the lease. We can play other places. They now have an owner, a minority partner. We'll just do 100. You know, we'll round it to 100, not including MLS stakes and all that kind of stuff. Andrew Hopman owns like 51% of the team. The name of the guy escapes me, who owns 49%. Sounds like he's going to try to take it over. He is a big deal in Chicago. He wants to. So the move to Chicago is the first step. This is actually a much bigger deal as they look to what replaces Bridgeview, what replaces Soldier Field as a temporary stadium.
Okay.
The Chicago Fire might actually be relevant. They're rebuilding in the future. They're not quite rebuilding now. They're laying the groundwork. Their team on the field to bring it back to Wednesday. Man, I have always had such high hopes for Vel Kapanovic, but it's just never come together the way I expected it. This is a team that always seems less than the sum of its parts.
Okay.
Well, you know, they're one of those teams that can be perplexing in a way just because they do have talent. I mean, they have guys that can score. They have guys that are the glue type of guys like a Dax McCarty. They have a World Cup guy like Schweinsteiger. They have a really quality keeper in David Ostead. In terms of attacking, they have CJ Sapong. I mean, they have good players. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Patrick. I don't understand why they've struggled so much. I mean, they got beat by Cincinnati this
yes,
past weekend
did.
At home.
Yeah.
At home.
Yes,
you
they
know?
Did.
But here's the thing about Bridgeview is that – have you ever been there?
No.
It's in the middle of a neighborhood. It's really bizarre.
How far from downtown Chicago?
Half
like
hour?
Loop,
it is about, I believe, 15 miles, yeah. Of course, Chicago
yeah.
traffic.
Yeah.
So last time I was
in Bridgeview.
No good
like,
way to get there, no mass
transit.
No.
Yeah.
So the last time I was in Bridgeview was actually April of last year. It was a family vacation. And we to save, yeah.
Man, you need to up that budget for your vacation, bud.
It was family.
Do they have a Wally World there that I was not aware of?
No, we didn't travel that far. But no, it was cold as anything. But we went to see the sights in Chicago and went to the museums and went to
Chicago's a great town.
And we stayed way out because we got a really great hotel deal.
Yeah.
And, that allowed us to stay an extra day. It was about 15 minutes away from Bridgeview. It was way the heck out there. And, you know, it made me think, okay, great pool. Oh, that's great. And saved a lot of money. Man, that's far away from the city. But Bridgeview, you're in the middle of nowhere. There's, you pass by seemingly like two cemeteries.
And a shell station.
A shell station, some residences, and then like, a rail depot. And then all of a sudden you have the stadium, which then they close pretty much after the game ends.
Yeah.
So it's also open air. So it was 32 degrees. I'm freezing my fingers off. The Crew lose 1-0. And I'm trying to write the recap and some of the other stuff, and there's this woman that is like giving up the bum's rush about like like an hour after the game, and I was with the dispatch beat writer at the time, Andrew Erickson, and we were trying to find a gate that was still open, and we thought we might have to climb a fence.
Wow.
Bridgeview is not hospitable.
I get it now, and I can't imagine as big as Chicago is. And as many things as there are to do on any given night.
Yeah, why would you
weekend,
go out there? Why would you?
What to get people that live in the city to
still,
go out there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
okay,
they're talking it'd still be 4, 5, 6, 7 years before you get a stadium built in the city. Because where are you going to find the land for that, right? Then you got to finance it and do all
Can't
the,
they just play at Wrigley Field?
Yeah.
Didn't the old NASL
yes,
team
they
play
did.
On Wrigley Field?
They did at Wrigley.
The old Chicago Sting.
The Sting
that's
did,
right.
Yeah.
But
bring
you know, I mean,
back.
But you know, as terrible of a venue as Bridgeview is, Chicago plays well there. They're 5-2-4 there. They can't win on the road to save their lives. But and again, you know, they have Nico Gatton, they have Nikolic. I mean, they have guys that can play, and they're floating on the edge of being.
They're desperate.
Well, here's the thing: they're in the playoffs right now.
Yeah. Well,
they're like fifth, I think.
No, Montreal is fifth. Chicago is...
Oh, they're just outside, right?
Yeah. Chicago's just outside.
Okay. So, but here's the thing. They have all that talent, and they're at home. Columbus cannot score to save their lives. So, if I'm Chicago, I go, this is a win, right? Unless Columbus does something different,
outside the last 3 months. Why wouldn't Chicago think they can win? They've only lost two at home all year. Columbus can't win anywhere. So Chicago's got to feel confident. And here's the thing. They rested Schweinsteiger over the weekend. So he's going to be a little more fresh. I mean, it's a good team that they have over there. So Columbus is going to have to really bring it and not let one breakdown like we saw in Orlando end the whole thing.
And that's the thing. One breakdown ends the game for the Crew. They have no margin for error. And we have a patchwork back line. Give me scores, guys.
Oh, Lord of mercy.
I think as limited as this team is, and if they roll in with the 4-3-3, which I understand the reasoning behind it, I just don't think we have the midfield to actually score goals, which,
right.
You know, which hasn't changed when they played the 4-2-3-1. But I think that this looks like yet another loss. I'm good. So in MLS, I predict losses on the road, ties on the road, wins at home. That's
yeah.
The, you know, for the, that's what it should be in hopes. However, I'm thinking that this is again another loss on the road. Prove me wrong, kids. Prove me wrong.
I'm gonna go 1-1.
1-1. That's optimistic.
And
I was Mr. Optimism early in this year. I predicted some bizarre 3-0 Crew wins, as I remember, Sam.
It's just very Bart of you,
Brian. Bart and I, you know. Well, Bart, I only see Bart in the beer line at Moffray Stadium. So we're just a couple of beer drinkers who see the world through beer goggles. But not this time. 2-0 Chicago for me.
I'm going to put a score to it. I'm going to go to, I would have to say there's a goal.
Now, why? Why would you
I'm going to go 2-1 because it happens occasionally.
All right. Sam?
Patrick took mine. I was going to go 2-1 also.
All right. 2-1 Chicago. For you as well.
2-1
you
Chicago.
You can share.
Yes.
Just for complete transparency, I'm actually thinking 0-0, but I'm just hoping it's not that awful.
That was
that
the
awful.
First score that dropped into my mind.
So I'm going 1-1.
I would, except that the Crew has a horrendous record at that damn field.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about that
place. I don't
place.
See... Even when they were good, they still had a hard time in Chicago. Why I don't ever see a win in Chicago itself.
Fair enough. All right. Saturday, we have a home match. July 20th, we have tickets. Listen to this podcast and then go to massreport.com to find out how you can win some tickets from our friends at 180 Property Development, right? All right. Montreal, they are in the playoffs, but they've dropped two in a row.
And here's the thing that's really mind-boggling. Of all the teams in the playoffs, Eastern and Western Conference, they have by far the worst goal differential. They're negative 10.
That catches up with you, right?
Absolutely. You know, and they've been playing without Piatti pretty much all year, who's their best player. Evan Bush is an okay keeper. I mean, Maxim Yarudi is their leader in assists. And who is it? Safir Tadir is their top goal scorer. They don't put up a ton of goals, and they give up a lot. But for whatever reason, it seems like when they lose big, like 5-1, 4-1. When they win, they just pull it out, 1-0, 2-1, that kind of thing. So, but they get results.
And they've had a weird season, too, where they had to start on the road for so long so they could wait for the snow to melt.
Right.
And as I remember, the Crew went up there when the field was brown, and they,
yeah,
they
that's right.
eked out, as you say, that 1-0 win on that late goal. And that seems like years ago at this point.
Well, you know, and they play a very – I mean, they play a 4-2-3-1 similar to what Columbus plays. It seems to be the formation of choice throughout the globe at this point, right? It's like what the 4-4-2 was 20 years ago. But to me, that this is a very winnable game for Columbus. Of the two, this is a game – and I feel like we say this week after week. This is a game they absolutely should – maybe not should win, but absolutely need to win.
Win?
Yeah. yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, Montreal isn't that stout of a team. They're not particularly great defensively, right? My hope is, hey, Wednesday, best case scenario, let's get a draw, right? Saturday, we hopefully have room playing, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe we can get in a guy like Romario Williams, Jordan Hamilton, just something different. And Saturday, let's get a win. I mean, even if it's 1-0, 2-1, get a win. There's only 5 more freaking home games left to begin with.
Yeah, I think that's the thing when you're looking, especially at Saturday. One, it's a home game. And two, reinforcements. So even if you're playing a fairly strong lineup,
and very little rotation on Wednesday, you have hopefully some reinforcements with Romario Williams, with Jordan Hamilton, with possibly Luis Diaz as an option to play some minutes. Certainly not a starter after coming off of injury and layoff. And then Eloy Room getting to get a start in front of the home crowd.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
You might have a chance to really see two to three of the new crew additions that say, okay, here's some of the hope for next year. I think when you're looking at long term, that hope is maybe Eloy Room a little bit longer, and then Luis Diaz a little bit longer. But this is, hey, things are changing. You know, Jordan Hamilton might play a role in the next good crew team. Eloy Room might be part of the next good crew team, and it might be as soon as next year.
So give me some scores.
All right, 1-0 crew.
Wow. All right.
I'm going to go hog wild and say 2-1 Columbus crew.
Sam.
I'm actually going to go 2-0 Columbus crew.
Hey, can I do a prediction for Bart since he's not here?
Yeah.
6-0 crew. That's a Bart prediction.
Wow. Well, I'm going to go a half Bart. Like a, 3-0 crew.
That's there we go. Yeah, okay.
I'm going back to it. It's insane. It makes no sense. 3-0 crew.
Why not?
So this being MLS, that of our score lines, I have the most faith that one's correct.
Well, fair enough.
It is MLS. You're right, Patrick.
Let's turn out. Let's hoist one for the new guys, and let's turn the page. It can't get any worse. So
we
let's
could
see
be
it
below
get better.
Cincinnati.
We're not.
Well, by points per game, yeah. We are.
Yeah, but I mean, in the
next
standing.
Monday on the Massive Report, we will be talking Hell is Real.
Real.
Only MLS would make us wait, you know, half a year.
Hell really is real, actually.
So,
right
so
now.
When they were announcing the schedule, I had actually started. So, you know, talking with, you know, we have a little Twitter feed, a little message feed between Sam, Pat, and I about like some of the editor stuff that we do for, you know, all the different stuff. And it's like, okay, who can cover, you know, the schedule announcement? Okay, should we start pre-writing that we're going to be at Cincinnati to open the year or something like that? And so my mind was always Cincinnati was going to be somewhere involved in like the first game for the team. And I even had a tweet pre-written and I was like, okay, Jesus, not the case. Not can't hit send. So, you know, that's all the little pre-work that you do. But yes, no, they're going to put it into August and they're going to slap him between 15 days because why not?
And not only that, they changed its time to make it earlier and make it a doubleheader. And they're probably kicking themselves for not making it at the beginning of the year when both teams were quasi-hot.
Yeah, but you know what? The game here is almost sold out if it's not already. It's pretty close.
Oh, it will be sold out, but how well will the form look?
So it doesn't. These rivalry games, I don't think necessarily matter for MLS as far as what the soccer looks like on the field in some cases, because they really love those full stadium scenes. And you know, having 20 whatever they're going to sell 26,000 in Nippert Stadium for the August 25th match, which 6 p.m. makes it a little bit better for me to get down there and back up in the same day. So. I'm all right with that. It's something that I'm sure that MLS is like, we'd rather them be good, but
it's going to sell it anyway.
We're still
going to
sell it anyway.
Yeah. All right, when's the first Hell is Real? Because I think I've got
August 10th.
August 10th. So I jumped ahead a week, right? I'm so excited.
Oh, yeah.
For this.
So yes. We have at
Man,
New York.
We still have to wait. That's ridiculous.
I think three out of the next four games are all on the road.
Yeah, it's at Chicago, Montreal, at New York Red Bull, at San Jose, Hell is Real, at Mafre, and then Toronto at Mafre, and then Hell. Oh no! Wait a minute. At New York City FC, in between then, and then Hell is Real down in Nippert.
Yeah,
and then beyond that, my memory gets hazy.
Well, and the Hell is Real down in Cincinnati is on a Sunday, not a Saturday.
Yeah, it's like at like 5, right?
Well,
yeah.
that's ironic.
6,
that's
I believe.
6, okay.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. I jumped the gun. I'm just so excited to talk
about
this.
Yay, something worth talking about.
So we have a few more weeks for that. All right, we'll be back next Monday. And listen to the Massive Report. Go to massreport.com to find out how you can win tickets to the Montreal game. Thanks to Patrick. Thanks to Mike. Thanks to Sam. I'm Brian. I work at CD185. Listen to my radio station, if you wouldn't mind. I would love that. We are brought to you by 180 Property Development for their sponsorship of the Mass Report. We are so appreciative. 180 Property Development is your partner in developing, redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. Thanks to Def Leppard. Thanks to Toto for inspiration, I guess. We'll be back next week after the crew play Chicago, and we're not so on that one. And after we destroy Montreal 3-0 on Saturday.
Or 6-0.
Bart, we'll see you back here next Monday at Hendox on Hockey.